Today on This Week in Iowa, a Frankenstein bill failed on the House floor and a rare Republican defeat. We'll explore what a Frankenstein bill means and how this similar tactic is being used a number of times this session. The reaction from Democratic leadership to the maneuvers of the majority, all covered this morning. Good morning and thank you for being with us for This Week in Iowa. I'm Mary Sugden. It's been an interesting session. Priorities stalled, rules suspended, but also major changes passed, like an overhaul of the tax system in our state. One weekend after the final funnel, Sabrina Ahmed spoke to Republican Speaker of the House Pat Grassley about what's happened so far this session.
So as you know, we've gotten a few bigger things off our plate. And I would say most importantly, you know, typically once you get past the second funnel, you start working your way towards end of session, obviously. Typically we're moving to the point where a lot of the conversations are just budget and tax policy related. Obviously, as has been discussed several times by everyone, the tax bill that we had already passed, that was a significant piece to get out of the way earlier in session than what we typically do. Typically, ends of sessions are tax policy. So we feel we've got one of those big hurdles out of the way. Obviously, this week we've moved towards starting to move budgets through committee, off the floor, which, you know, our obligation as a legislature is to obviously pass a budget. And we're in a position where we're passing another balanced budget that's funding the priorities of Iowans, but also at the same time, making sure it's responsible and it's sustainable long term. And that's been the priority of our caucus for, you know, over a decade now, to pass budgets in that manner. So those are kind of the big things that are out there. I know there's some other policy issues, you know, that have been lingering around since early in session. We've got a bill dealing with school choice. Obviously, that is a big bill that we're still trying to work through. And it's, you know, I think we get a lot of, some people are being awfully critical of the fact that nothing has moved yet. I also say, you know, with that significant of a piece of legislation, we would be getting taking a hard time if we rushed it through as well. So I tell you, you know, when you're doing significant pieces of legislation like that, which is a, you know, a pretty big shift in the way we fund some levels of K-12 education, you know, we're taking our time. We want to work through the caucus to see what concerns need to be addressed. So I would say that's one of the bigger policy pieces that's still out there. It's obviously alive. And if we were able to reach consensus within the caucus, we could still take action on that. Also, you know, we're looking at doing some adjustments to unemployment. We have an unemployment trust fund that we want to make sure stays solvent long term. And right now, with over the last 2 years, we've had to put in over $700 million into that to keep it solvent. So we're looking at making some adjustments to the unemployment system in the state, because we have 100,000 open jobs. I think right now is the perfect opportunity to do that. We're not saying we're going to take away unemployment benefits. We just want to encourage people to go back into the workforce. I think all of us can remember in the last 6 months going to somewhere, waiting in line 10 times longer than you ever imagined, or not being able to get service, or a place is closed when it's usually open. So we need to be there. You know, there's people that are stepping up every day, taking on that extra shift. The government plays a role from the standpoint of, you know, making sure that unemployment system is meeting today's workforce needs.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit more about those school vouchers. I understand, you know, working through it, meeting those needs, but a lot of these concerns are coming from rural schools who simply say, we don't have the private schools and we can't afford to take money out of our public education system. You know, how do you fix that? Is it negotiations, or is it just trying to convince them to make it work?
Well, I think also, and that's, so I have one of those districts that's very similar to what you just described, and a lot of our caucus members do, and we recognize that. But what I would also say in response to that, if there aren't those opportunities and options for other students and parents to be able to make the decisions to send them, I don't see where those impacts would really be in a negative light if there aren't alternatives there. You know, there are some rural areas that do have options and choices, but there's also others that don't. And so what I've been very clear back home when I'm talking to folks in my district, you know, will it have the same impact on House District 50, the one that I represent, as other districts and other rural districts? No, because the options there are much less, if any at all. And so that's what I tell you. I think it's a kind of an interesting argument to make that we don't have private schools, but this is going to hurt us. Well, I don't necessarily see it that way. I see it that if you don't have private schools or any sort of option for kids to go, I don't know why you would lose students if the option doesn't exist.
On the unemployment changes that you mentioned, that's stalled, putting a 16-week cap on unemployment insurance. What is the issue that you're hearing from your caucus on that?
Well, I think that we're actually getting to a point where here, you know, we're hoping to bring it up at some point this week. We would like to be in that position to bring it up. And part of that has just been, again, you know, these are big topics. And the fact that I think we set up a false expectation by passing a tax bill fairly early in session, that everyone thinks that everything just should move through. You know, we still have to take the time to get agreements in the House and the Senate, the governor. We're trying to be on somewhat of the same page as these things move forward. So I think by acting so quickly on such a large tax bill, because we had consensus, has set us up for people to think, well, everything else is stalled. I would actually just say it's more of the legislative process working itself out.
Sabrina continues her conversation with Grassley in a few minutes, but first we hear from Democrats on the session so far after the final funnel. You're watching This Week in Iowa. The Democrats say this session is not following the rules, and Republicans still can't get done what they want. Here's Sabrina's conversation with Minority Leader Representative Jennifer Confirst.
I just want to talk about, can you just kind of talk to me about what has happened up until now? We're hearing a lot of terms like Frankenstein bill and, you know, things may be getting moved to different committees because they didn't make it out of funnel, but they're not dead. You know, just kind of frame the conversation at the State House for me this morning.
Well, gosh, we're certainly putting this all in terms of zombies and monsters, right? And that's kind of how it feels up here sometimes during session. Yeah, we like to say that no bill is dead until we're home and session is over, because things can come back. There are a lot of procedural moves that can happen. But what we're finding is a lot of the ideas that are being proposed by the majority party don't have consensus within their caucus, and certainly don't have consensus with the general public. And so what they're trying to do is move them around to find a way to get a bill passed, which isn't necessarily the right way to do it, right? We should be hearing what Iowans want and giving them that. But instead, we're trying to put things together into a bill that has nothing to do with each other, which we've been calling the Frankenstein bill. And then it got broken apart and moved around because these are priorities of special interests, which is fine, but that's not actually what Iowans want. And so that's what we've been seeing happening a lot, where every morning we wake up and we say, where is the unemployment bill going to be today? And it's just a matter of them trying to do all they can to get their members pulled together to find a consensus.
Of course, it's Sunday morning. As of the taping of this interview, where is the unemployment bill?
So as of the taping of this interview, the unemployment bill is actually back. The cuts to unemployment that would take unemployment from down to 16 weeks is on the agenda for today, because it was added as an amendment to another bill, a pretty harmless bill that would have actually been good for unemployment, for people on unemployment in the state. But this bill was added as an amendment to that bill. So we've been scrambling last night and this morning to determine our response. What amendments can we propose? Because as the minority party, our best voice for the Iowans is to propose amendments to try to make bills better. And that's what we're going to try to do this morning.
The unemployment changes exist also kind of wrapped up in this, what Governor Reynolds was calling her workforce changes, was also this cap on medical malpractice cases and cap on damages for car insurance cases. We just heard this week from a gentleman who said, you know, his wife, this is terrible, was decapitated in a car accident. And the driver of the tow truck drove off and tried to blame it on someone else. And it was a whole thing. Ended up that it was found that this tow truck driver was in fact at fault for this case, killing his wife. Damages at $1 million. He says it's not enough. You know, talk to me about where that lies now.
So the bill that would have capped non-economic damages for people who are injured in trucking accidents through no fault of their own, it did die last week. Again, nothing's dead until we go home. But because, again, we're hearing from Iowans that these are things that juries should decide, and that, you know, it's very easy to say, well, we want to cap, you know, the non-economic damages for people at $1 million. Well, that might sound like a lot, but tell that to someone whose child was killed in a bus accident and their non-economic damages or was injured and, you know, needs to have care for the rest of their lives. $1 million isn't going to begin to cut it. And so we think those decisions need to be left up to juries. which are Iowans, right? And so we think that those decisions are best left up to jurors. The medical malpractice caps, the trucker immunity cap or non-economic damages caps, those both appear to be in hibernation right now. And we'll see how it goes. But as of right now, they're not on the agenda, which is great news for Iowans.
In hibernation, I'm going to use that.
Yeah. Although Sabrina, it does bring to mind a cuddly bear. And these things are certainly not cuddly bears living in caves. They're things that are bad for Iowans. So I don't know if that's a good phrase or not.
There was another issue that was brought up by Representative Bobby Kaufman, and that was an amendment to a cosmetology bill. And that was something to block eminent domain for the next year for pipelines. Where does that live? What are your thoughts on that being the process that's being used?
Look, I mean, Representative Kaufman is the chair of the State Government Committee, and he had a bill that he introduced at the beginning of session that would have addressed concerns of landowners with regard to pipeline and using eminent domain to take land for public good, in this case, a carbon pipeline, which we're not sure if that meets the definition of public good or not. We don't think it does. So he had that bill. He's the chair of state government. He could have brought it up then. He didn't. And so now he's tacked it on as an amendment to a bill that has nothing to do with the pipeline. It has to do with cosmetology licensing. And it's a procedural move. And the frustrating part here is that it's kicking the can down the road on a conversation that we need to have as a state. We need to have a conversation about landowner rights, about eminent domain, about making sure that we're protecting farmers and landowners, and that we're having honest conversations. All this is doing is saying, let's deal with it next year. And I just don't think that's enough. I think Iowans deserve better.
We switch gears to look ahead what's left for the rest of this session. Goals from Republican leadership for the next month or so, next. So what happens next? A number of priorities that didn't make it through funnel were moved to appropriations, meaning they are still alive despite not making it out of committee. Sabrina spoke with Pat Grassley about those pieces of legislation and what's left for the rest of this session.
Everyone has interests within that bill. So we put ourselves in a position, and I clarify, and I was very clear, when we make a decision to go to the floor, we obviously make that decision thinking we have 51 votes. We don't go to the floor just saying, oh, we have 40 votes, let's just see what happens. We like to get our caucus in a position. So when we made the decision to pull the trigger to go to the floor, we filed our amendments, we were at 51 votes. So I always clarify that, that was not a purposeful decision that was made to see something happen. And obviously that's not what we want to see happen. But what I can tell you is the reason we put those issues together, and I know there's some people with some frustrations, but what I would say is we had two significant issues that members of the caucus, not all, but members of the caucus wanted to see addressed. That was dealing with medical freedom, and that was dealing with commercial vehicle tort reform. And to put us in a position where we thought that we could have the support for both of those, we needed the different segments of the caucus working together to try to find consensus, because it was really hard to find it for each individual piece standalone. And so, you know, at the end of the day, my job is to try to figure out a way to get us out of session within 100 days. That's obviously number one, manage 59 members' expectations. And that's why we went down that path to try to build some level of consensus within the caucus. It's frustrating, but obviously we have to make decisions with the counts that we have at the time.
Another bill that we're seeing that might not be two related topics is this cosmetology bill and then this added pipeline eminent domain conversation to it. Talk to me about that decision if you support that.
Yeah. So the reason we chose that vehicle and this one is much less of, I know that that's being thrown out there that we're trying to pull a fast one. That cosmetology bill, the language from that bill has found itself a home in another piece of policy. So basically we just took, yes, that's the title of the bill, but that policy had already is being dealt with in another piece of legislation. So really all we did is just took a bill number and a piece of paper. We didn't hijack any specific piece of legislation. That's being dealt with in another bill we have in Ways and Means. And so,
you know, we talked about education before break. I'd like to bring it up one more time and talk about the Parents' Bill of Rights. There are some concerns from Democrats about the publishing of materials too far in advance, for example, Representative Converse here in just a few moments is going to talk about if the Winterset tornado happens, you know, is a teacher not allowed to show photos because they didn't publish the documents back in August?
I will tell you that we have a lot of folks in our caucus that have been working on this extensively. So we're taking a little bit different approach in the House, and we're hopeful to take some action with that bill this week out of committee and then get it to the floor. A bill that would, what we're calling, you know, a transparency bill. What we're trying to do is make sure that parents have access to the materials that their son or daughter are learning about in school. The expectation isn't that you publish something at the beginning of the school year. What we're trying to do is, you know, most school districts, almost 90% of the school districts already have Google Classroom, and there's another term, something that that the teachers use. But there's those platforms that already exist. All we're saying is that if parents want to be able to access that, and the teachers that we talk to, for the most part, are using that almost solely, very little handouts and other material. All we're saying is those platforms already exist. If parents choose, we're not saying that they have to, but if a parent proactively wants that material, we think that the parent should be able to see that. And it's the same thing that exists when it comes to the books. There's a lot of accusations that we're trying to go in and ban specific books and all of this. Well, I can tell you that, this material exists in the school districts. It does material that I do not think is appropriate for whether it's elementary or even high school kids. Some of the things that I've seen in even school districts in my own district back in rural Iowa, I find greatly disturbing. And so what I'm saying is if a parent wants to say, look at the book list proactively and say, my student shouldn't be able to check out X, Y, and Z, that is the parent's choice and right to be able to let the school know. And then the school doesn't allow that to happen. We're not trying to go in and pick and choose which books we think are appropriate. We think that's the job of the parents to do. And again, it's something the parents are going to have to do proactively. And where my frustrations are, all I ever hear about when I go to parent teacher conferences, we wish more parents would be involved and be active in their child's education. How many times have we heard that for the last decade? And now we're trying to encourage that more, and we're getting some pushback on that. All we're trying to do is encourage parents to be involved in their children's education.
Representative Jennifer Converse isn't quite too optimistic about the next few months. More with the House Minority Leader next. Some priorities of the Republicans are considered dead. They didn't make it out of committee before funnel. But as Minority Leader Jennifer Converse explains, nothing's ever dead here, starting with scholarships, public money paying for private schools.
Right now, we're hearing that they don't have the votes in the Republican caucus to get this passed. They absolutely won't get votes from Democrats, and so they need to find votes among their own caucus. And we're hearing especially rural legislators don't want to do this because it's not good for small schools. It's an idea that in theory sounds great, right? Just let a student take dollars and take them to a private school if that's where they want to go. Well, first of all, that money comes from somewhere. It comes from public schools. And when you're in a rural community where there aren't any private schools, that money still goes away from public schools and there's nowhere for students to go. And so schools will close. And so we think it's just, and we think, and we're glad that enough Republicans agree with us, that it's just not a good use of tax dollars.
Let's continue that discussion about education, though, and talk about this Parents' Bill of Rights. It appears to maybe be pretty bipartisan that we're hearing. It lays out all of the rights parents have for in their schools with their child. But maybe there was some potential for, I don't know, Senator Walz was alluding, maybe something else could get tacked on to this. Talk to me about where that lies.
Well, I mean, if we can add an eminent domain amendment to a cosmetology bill, certainly anything can be added on to anything. And so when it comes to the Parents' Bill of Rights, certainly in theory, it sounds like a great idea. I feel that as a parent, I always had rights. I could always go into my kids' classroom. My teachers were begging for parents to come in and volunteer over the lunch hour. I always was able to go in and see the books in my kids' reading bucket and, have good conversations with teachers. So I'm not sure this is a necessary legal step, but transparency is transparency, so we'll support that. The biggest concern lies with, are we putting too much burden on schools to post materials a year in advance? I mean, let's say we just had storms in Iowa, right? So let's say that teachers had to post all their materials on August 1st. Well, we had storms in Iowa, so is that saying that a Winterset teacher can't add new material to her classroom that's relevant to what's happening today because she had to post it in August? That doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. So what we're asking about this bill, and really all bills, does it pass the common sense test? And I just think that this one has the potential to get way out of the realm of common sense.
Final topic I'd like to discuss real quick is a proposal for school funding, but for the Regents, instead of increasing the Regents by their requested $18 million, instead they're going to make competitive dollars available in a new pool of money that would then go to schools who have offer the most opportunities for some of these high need jobs. In theory, it sounds like it would help to fix the workforce shortage.
Sure. In theory, I think as always, the devil's in the details, right? So that's $12 million divided among the three Regents institutions for scholarships, which is great. Those scholarships are $10,000. They happen in the last 2 years of college with $2,500 bonus if you stay in Iowa for a year. That will help about 1,200 students in the state of Iowa. About 80,000 students go to Regents institutions. And what we know is that if we're not funding the Regents institutions with what they need, then tuition's gonna go up. So what we do is if we're targeting money to scholarships for 1,200 students, the only way they're gonna be able to keep the lights on is to raise tuition for other students. And so I'm not sure it's fair, in fact, I know it's not, to try to solve this problem for 1,200 students and leave the rest paying the bill. It just isn't fair. And at the end of the day, this is a tiny, tiny approach to a huge problem we have in our state, which is a workforce crisis that we need to look at holistically.
And leaders hope this legislative session will wrap before Easter. Per diems run out, so legislators stop getting paid on April 19th. We'll put those conversations on our website, weareiowa.com. Thank you so much for joining us for This Week in Iowa. Sabrina Ahmed returns next week. If you missed any of this newscast, you can find it on weareiowa.com or listen to it again on Spotify. You can also find it anywhere you get your podcasts. Hope you have a great rest of your weekend.